Welcome to Builders, a podcast from BetaWorks Studios featuring the amazing people who build things, the makers and the doers, not just the talkers, the people who are helping shape this world and the next world we'll live in. My name is Layla Oweda, and I'll be your guide. All these episodes are recorded live at Studios, our New York City clubhouse for builders and anyone else interested in the startup ecosystem. Each week, they feature a new and diverse mix of people drawn from our community. Only at BetaWorks Studios will you find founders and the network around founders authentically chatting about subjects that really matter. If you want to know more about our club, just visit betaworks-studios.com anytime or contact me for a day pass. But listening to these podcasts is a pretty good reflection of life here. One week, we might be talking about how to design for blockchain or build experiences in the age of Instagram. And the following week, we're chatting with technology luminaries like Jaron Lanier on why we should probably all delete our social media accounts. We love looking ahead, but we also like taking stock. This week, we're featuring Michelle Serro, an entrepreneur, founder, and opera singer. She has such a varied and interesting background and has achieved so many things. She's just a treasure trove of interesting ideas for anyone thinking of starting a business. For instance, Michelle talks about some early lessons she learned when she was a partner at design firm IDEO.
You know, when I was at IDEO, one of the founders was a guy called David Kelly, and he said, never go to a meeting without a prototype. And what he meant by that was never go to a meeting with just an idea or just a concept. Go with like an actual physical articulation of what actually you're talking about.
Michelle's the founder of a company called Doorsteps. In its first 3 months, Doorsteps brought in $1 million in revenue. So it's not surprising that it was acquired by Realtor.com. She talks about her team at Doorsteps, how she hires, how she keeps people happy, but also her very scrappy beginnings.
So I raised a small friends and family round, which when people tell you that, that just essentially means that a family member gave them the money. It's just like a very fancy way. My dad loaned me the money. We did a note.
So stay tuned for a wealth of great advice on everything from agile design to the importance of celebrating even small launches. Michelle was invited to speak by the team behind Tech Ladies. They were hosting an event here at Studios called Ladies Who Launch. You'll hear Allison from Tech Ladies first.
Hi, everybody. Thank you so much for coming out. So the idea for this event was basically we just launched our new job board. I don't know, has anybody seen it yet? And this is really big for us. Jobs have been a big part of Tech Ladies for a while. But if you don't know the basics of Tech Ladies, we're a community of women and non-binary people in tech. We do webinars. We have our online community. We do events like these all across the U.S. and Canada. And we're growing. So if you're not a member yet, we would love to have you. You can join on hiretechladies.com. But the idea for tonight is that, you know, when we were working on launching our job board, we're like, you know what? It's not just us launching something. And we could have a party for that. And it's a good reason to like get drinks and hang out with people in our community. But we also want to show off and learn from other women who've launched products recently. So that's where we came up for the idea for this with our hashtag Ladies Who Launch. So thank you all so much for being here. I'm going to pass it over to Madeline from Tech Ladies, who can tell you a little bit about our first speaker.
Welcome. Thanks for being here. My name is Madeline. I have been a part of Tech Ladies for a couple months now. I lead our founding membership group. If you have questions, if you're interested in joining, it's just a slightly more intimate group than our larger group. Happy to chat with you about it. But this is not about me. So I'm going to introduce our next speaker, Michelle. Michelle Serro is an entrepreneur, investor, former opera singer. Michelle founded Doorsteps in 2011 and served as its CEO until it was acquired by Move, Inc., owner and operator of Realtor.com, in May of 2013. After leading a successful integration, she left the company in August 2015. In the first 3 months, with no outside funding, Doorsteps brought in more than $1 million in revenue thanks to a lucrative partnership with Citigroup and its SaaS platform, used by millions of real estate agents, mortgage brokers, and homeowners around the company to buy and own homes. After Doorsteps' acquisition, Michelle continued to lead the team and launched Doorsteps Swipe. She was a graduate from the Juilliard School and Indiana University. Michelle has written for Fast Company, Huffington Post, and the Wall Street Journal about real estate design and her personal journey as an entrepreneur. In 2016, Michelle founded Enough Brands, a platform that leverages behavioral and data-driven insights to make consumer goods that define what enough can look like and feel like today. Currently, she's focused on the people-related aspects of crypto, working to improve the desirability, accessibility, and usability of crypto assets and crypto networks. So, without further ado, let's welcome Michelle.
I haven't heard my bio in a long time. I was a little bit, thank you. I was like, okay, I haven't heard that in a while. Thank you for reading all of that. Thank you for having me. I'm really happy to be here. I love BetaWorks because, as you will hear from some of the things I talk about, I love betas, love the idea of prototyping. So the idea of not necessarily spending a lot of time figuring out what you're going to do, instead just creating something and learning from it, is something that's very true to who I am as a person. So I really appreciate being here. And hopefully some of the things that I'll talk about today, hopefully all of them, will apply to you regardless of if you're starting your own thing or if you're leading a team inside a large organization or inside a small organization, but hopefully there are lessons that you can take with you wherever you go. I definitely started on this journey, as you mentioned, when I was at IDEO, definitely learned how to think at that place. And I think that that's sort of taken me through all of the aspects of my career. So the first one is don't decide design. What I mean by that is, I think, regardless of wherever we are within the context of the project, we usually don't have all the information that we need to make the right decision. And so I've spent many times, I think, doing lots of research, figuring out exactly what the right thing is to do. And you're never going to have the right thing to do. You're never going to know what the right thing to do. So instead of spending days, weeks, months trying to decide what to do, I say just design. So design a prototype. Design something that you can actually bring out to users. And again, back to the BetaWorks example, I think this idea of, you know, when I was at IDEO, one of the founders was a guy called David Kelly. And he said, never go to a meeting without a prototype. And what he meant by that was, never go to a meeting with just an idea or just a concept. Go with like an actual physical articulation of what actually you're talking about, because if actually you do that, you will have a far more robust conversation, because it won't be what does she mean, what does he mean. It'll actually be an articulation, and more than likely it will actually be wrong, but that's a good thing, or not necessarily a good thing, but it's a thing that potentially might happen on your way to getting to the right answer. The second thing is stay out of the weeds. And this is something that I always have to remind myself as a leader. When I started Doorsteps, which is a site for renters to transition to first-time home buyers, I think that other than programming, I tried to do everything within the context of the company. I think we oftentimes do that when we're starting at a project. So I wanted to understand how to do everything. But when you get to a point where you actually have a team that can actually execute for you, I think the most important thing as the leader, as the founder of the team, or wherever you are, is to actually connect people back to the mission and the vision that you started with. So I remember there were days when people were working on a feature or working on monetization within the context of an aspect of the project. And I think that oftentimes people can get really frustrated because they're not there. And I remember feeling like when I was burnt out and frustrated, it usually meant that my team was burnt out and frustrated. So that was the moment to put the pictures on the wall of the users we were actually designing for. That first-time homebuyer that actually had this fright in their eyes or in their voice that didn't know what to do. When you start to connect people back with the original mission, it brings a vibrance and an inspiration back into the team, and doesn't necessarily always focus them on the details. While the details are super important, I think connecting back to the original mission, because how you get there will always change, regardless of where you are. But if you can connect them back to the original mission, that will ensure people will at least, for the most part, stay inspired. The next thing is celebrate. I learned this from a software developer that I worked with in the beginning of Doorsteps. We worked in an agile fashion in terms of software, and we used to have iterations. We would release our software, every day for the most part, maybe sometimes multiple times a day. But then we would have a big iteration. Let's just say it was a 3-week iteration. And while it wasn't necessarily the product that we wanted it to be or necessarily the end goal, it was really important to celebrate that milestone that we had made. And I think before I felt like that was premature or for some reason I wasn't allowed to celebrate because we didn't achieve it. But I soon realized that that's actually so important for a team, and it was so important for me. So we might take a lunch to celebrate a release we did, but we'll go back to work. But that celebration was really important to the long-term vision, and so I think celebrating is a really important part of any project. The next thing is get out of your category. So Doorsteps was a site to transition renters to first-time homebuyers, and so at the time when I launched Doorsteps, it was around 2012. And unfortunately, there weren't a ton of entrepreneurs that were tackling these sort of billion-dollar card-carrying member industries where there were lots of stakeholders. Housing, financial services, healthcare, education, these really important challenges that unfortunately a lot of people weren't tackling. And there was multiple reasons why they weren't, because in some ways they actually weren't as sexy as some of the other maybe consumer applications. But there were reasons why entrepreneurs weren't tackling it, and there were reasons why investors weren't tackling them, because there were some regulations involved that are a little bit of the antithesis to working as a startup. You know, you're designed to sort of move fast, and unfortunately, when you have lots of regulations in place or people you need to get to make decisions before you move forward, that's not necessarily an entrepreneur-friendly world, especially in the investing world. That, thankfully, has changed, which has been really exciting over the past couple of years to see that. But what I realized, there are two things. I think at the time, back in 2012, we wanted to be the best within the housing category. And so we would look at other people who are in housing. We would say, God, that design is such shit. Why is housing such crap in terms of design? And I think we were trying to make ourselves feel better in terms of being the best within housing. And while I think that was super important, and while I think that was definitely an admirable aspiration, our consumers or the people that were using our tools weren't necessarily spending hours and days and weeks on housing apps. I mean, they might be, but they were on other applications, other consumer applications like Instagram or Facebook or Twitter. And so I had to get us to a point where it said, okay, yes, we should definitely raise the bar within our category, but remember that our users are not comparing our services to other housing startups. They're comparing us to the other services that they're using all day long. So I think getting out of your category is important from the perspective of your competition is not necessarily who you think it is. And second of all, from an inspiration perspective, I remember, this is a pretty old example, but there was a time, and I'm not sure if this is still the case because I haven't had cable come to my house in a very long time, but I remember Time Warner used to give us like a 6 or 8 hour window that they were going to come to our place. And at the time, there were other delivery services like Instacart that were giving us a 2-hour window. And I said to myself, why is Time Warner giving us an 8-hour window and Instacart's giving us a 2-hour window? So just another example of like your consumers are not necessarily comparing you to the competitors within your category. They're comparing you to other great experiences. So my suggestion is, regardless of where you are, in a large company, small company, startup, try to put yourself in the shoes of your users, not necessarily compare yourselves to other people within your category, but actually go outside your category to benchmark yourself. The next thing is revolution is greater than disruption. And again, this might be up for debate today, but I remember back in around 2012 or 2013, Jack Dorsey talked at TechCrunch Disrupt, and he said that he thought that the conference needed to be renamed, that actually disruption was not necessarily a good thing, that revolution was actually the more admirable way to go. And I absolutely understood that at the time because I worked in housing where there were 12 or 14 stakeholders that were at stake. There were the home buyer, the seller, the real estate agent, the loan officer, the title. There are so many people involved. And I have to tell you, after speaking to thousands of real estate agents, they hated the process just as much as you did. And so they didn't necessarily, when I looked at them, They needed vision. They needed mission to actually bring them along as well. And so I think it was interesting because I think I related to it because Jack Dorsey was in financial services. And financial services is different than Airbnb and Uber. And I say this because revolution is greater than disruption is not to say that actually founders shouldn't be bold. I think founders should be incredibly bold. But when you're working in a category like Airbnb is in or Uber, no, you're not going to go to every single person and ask them if it's okay to operate at the local, you know, taxi commission. You ask for forgiveness, not permission in that category, but housing, financial services, education, these are really important industries where if you break the law or you actually screw with someone within the industry, you will get burned and you won't succeed. So I really believe this idea of like revolution has meaning. And I'm going to just read something quickly that he said, which I thought was so powerful and it stuck with me today. He said, revolution has value, revolution has purpose, a direction and leaders. We don't want disruption where we just move things around. We want direction, we want purpose. That really meant something to me because we spent so much time with all of these stakeholders within the category. And they were dying for someone to give them a mission and a vision that they could believe in as well. And so I think that's just a good reminder. When you think about the category, I try to think about it like the Jenga puzzle. You know, Jenga is the kind of thing where if you put all the pieces in and they go in perfectly and you pull them out and you can go forever, you know, because that system is so well designed. I think if you're working in an industry like that, and anybody's in this room that's working in these like billion dollar archaic industries, like you move one piece, you move all of the pieces. And so I believe that having empathy for the system, actually having empathy for all the single player, every single player within the system is important in order to move the whole system along. And so I say this not to say that you shouldn't be bold. Be bold. Like, potentially your vision somewhere down the line for your company, again, whether it be you work within a corporation or you work in your own startup, be bold in terms of where you see that industry going, because I think that's super important. But understand that it's not, as a lot of people have realized, it's not move fast and break things within these types of industries because it's too important to people's lives. And the last one is, this is the one that every time I talk about this one, it makes me so inspired. Be a place where people can do the best work of their lives. I think that regardless of where we are, if we have our own startup, if we're embarking on a startup, if we're within a company, if we're leading a team, that is a gift that we have as a leader. And I think that being a leader is a gift and that we have an opportunity, an awesome opportunity, to create an environment where someone could do the best work that they've ever done in their life. And I think that, you know, a couple of years ago, this idea of fancy offices, lots of snacks, expensive monitors got a really bad name. And I'm not saying it's about expensive things. I think that it's about figuring out what your company needs, what your team needs, what that person is looking for, and figuring out the really interesting middle between the two. And I don't believe that's manipulation. I don't believe that's actually selfish. I believe that's in a really incredible way to work, because when a person sits down and they feel like they're getting what they need within the context of their career and you are getting what you need, that person will be loyal to you. That person will want to grow with you. That specifically was something that was very important to me when it came to technical talent, because I'm a non-technical founder. And so I needed to earn technical team members. I needed to earn a technical co-founder. And I think that while I couldn't necessarily hire a tech team that would be managed by an incredible technology leader, I could give them other things that they needed, whether that be education, access to other things. And so I think that's just a reminder that all of us in this room are leaders, regardless of where we are, and we have the opportunity to get the best out of people. And I think if we all remember that, we'd have an incredible time as leaders, and we'd also give an incredible opportunity to the people that worked with us. That's it.
We're going to take a couple of questions. We have a couple more speakers, but we don't want you to forget your questions that you have for Michelle. So we're going to take a few questions from the audience, and then we'll put like three or four, and then move on. Okay?
Hi, Michelle. Hi. Mr. Guthrie Miller, could you speak to what it was like for retaining tech talent in the early days? Just because many of us who are founders were coming up against targeting of building out female talent in some of the larger corporations. And I feel like as a female technical founder, it's really hard to drive the right balance in our own companies right now.
Yeah. That's a good question. That is something that plagued me throughout my whole entire career. And I think that what was really important for me, and I can only speak for myself, is I wasn't going to try to be someone that I wasn't. And so I wasn't going to try to be a technical leader or a pseudo-tech. I was never, ever going to be that person. And I also wasn't necessarily, I didn't have the money at the time to bring in a very, very senior person. And so I think that what I just tried to offer was other things. And I promise you, like, those other things matter. And so I just very, very quickly, I was a non-technical founder. I needed a technical education. So I raised a small friends and family round, which when people tell you that, that just essentially means that a family member gave them the money. It's just like a very fancy way. My dad loaned me the money. We did a note. And so I worked with Pivotal Labs for about 3 or 4 months to build an initial product. And I hope no one from Pivotal is here. But anyways, I broke like some laws there, and I ended up... They call them pivots. The pivots who worked on my project, one of them actually came over. And I will tell you, I think I earned, and when people say you earn a technical fact, I believe that, but it's different. Like, I showed him who I was, and I showed him what mattered to me. And I think that he was eager for leadership. And so I could give that to him. I could help him figure out how to get the best out of junior developers, to how to get the best out of designers, how to work with designers. I made him, like, he wasn't ready for the job, but I gave him the job that he wanted. And so I think it just got to a point where I felt like I made him feel like he was up here, but he was down here, and then he just grew up there. So make a very long story short, is I think just be who you are and try not to be someone else. And you might have to hire more junior talent. And you know, there are a lot of people.
We're a technical team. I meant in terms of retention.
I mean, I don't know if there's a magic bullet to being able to retain talent. I mean, I think that the reason why people stayed with our team was because they believed in the vision, they believed in the mission, and they just wanted to develop a great product for people who needed it. And so, I don't know, if people don't stay, that's probably for a number of reasons. And it might be the time for them to leave. Like, I firmly believe, like, I was at IDEO for 7 years. IDEO couldn't give me the opportunities that I needed, so I needed to leave. So there will be people that are going to leave. But I think that tapping into truly what that person is looking for. So I always say to myself, why is that person leaving? And can you offer them the opportunity that they're going somewhere else to look for, whether that be more of a connection to a mission and a vision? I paid for some education for devs out of my own money. Like, and I'm not saying you all should do that, but I figured out what the developers needed, and I figured out a way to give it to them. So maybe that's a desperate, I will do anything to make it happen, founder in me. But I really believe that tapping into, I apologize, I didn't listen to your whole question. Tapping into what the developer needs and what actually they want for themselves over the next couple of years is really important.
Hi, Michelle.
Hi.
I just wanted to ask you about when you spoke about trying to do all aspects of the business. I think that definitely spoke to me and many other solo founders. And I wanted to see what advice you have, you know, before you have a team. A lot of times the problem is funding to build a team. So any advice you have initially?
So when I say I did everything other than code, like, I did everything really poorly. Like, I was doing wireframes, and they were bad. But at least I knew, like, I could give someone a sense of where I was headed. So I cheated a little bit in that I had a bunch of my very close friends are designers. And so I'm a big believer in using design to prototype. So I'd hire a friend of mine for a couple of days to help create visually, not necessarily in code, a vision of what I wanted it to look like. So I would just say, like, use whatever tools you have at your disposal. I'm in the situation now where I'm trying to figure out, like, how to do that. But I think that, so think about your tool set, whatever your tool set is, and then think about what is the most effective way I can actually get my vision across to someone. And for me, it was graphic design. I love graphic design. If I could, I'd come back as a graphic designer, because I firmly believe that every, like, Fortune 50 CEO needs a graphic designer as their right-hand person, because I think being able to visually articulate your vision or mission to an organization is so powerful. So there are so many tools out there today for non-technical founders, people who not necessarily designers per se, but I would just say use whatever tools you have at your disposal, whatever way you can get that mission or vision across passionately. That helps.
Last question.
Hi. So you've had a very diverse and kind of
winding. Yeah, I know. I noticed that as you were background. Reading my bio. I was like, wow, she's all over the place.
So my question is, did you find your diverse background to be helpful to what you've accomplished? And how did you kind of rope in the things you've learned across your different experiences to help you with your app?
I think that I tried to always use the diversity that I had as an asset. So the opera singer turned design consultant turned first-time homebuyer, housing, startup founder was like, that was a good story, you know? And I think that people love, unfortunately, they love the stories like that. But I think that I just tried to bring from everything that I've learned something to whatever I was working on. So if people always talk about, oh, what are you bringing from being an opera singer here? It was like, I know how to lead a team. Like, I know how to work within an ensemble. I know how to get the best out of someone. Like, I know how to be on a stage with someone. And I know that if I show up in a really positive way, I'm going to get really good singing out of them. Or if I show up like everything's shit, your work is crap, their work will be crap, I promise. So I think that just trying, I would try to flip it in terms of like it not being a deterrent, have it being an asset. Like, I actually think the diversity is a really good thing. Maybe I'm a little bit spoiled because at IDEO there was like a ton of three-legged dogs. Like, everyone, like, this idea of the fact that you came from an incredibly diverse background and these things didn't necessarily match up was an incredible thing, because the quality of the thinking was going to be so good, because the way that you approach the problem, the way that I approach the problem, the way that somebody else approached the problem was going to be amazing. Like, sometimes we didn't know what we were going to get, but I think we always knew that the thinking was going to be better than if we had three people who all had the same experience, the same background, the same perspective. So I think that what I've tried to do, and I'm very appreciative to be here tonight because these are all reminders for myself. And I think that just answering your question also now is, I often think I'm a little bit all over the place, but if that's where my attention is going, if that's where my excitement is going, then I have to use that to my advantage. Like, just as specifically what I realized was, I've been just sort of for the past year and a half just drawn to cryptocurrencies and Bitcoin. And I thought that my what I wanted to do in the space was not necessarily, it was a little bit out of my reach. And what I realized was the same thing that I did with doorsteps, with transitioning renters to first-time homebuyers, I want to do the same thing within this category. So it's the same thing. It just happens to be within a different sector. So I think that there is a narrative thread. And so if you can try to find the narrative thread with yourself within the context of what you're working on, I think that if it makes sense to you, then you can figure out a way for it to make sense for someone else.
All right, that was Michelle Serro, founder and former CEO of Doorsteps, with some crazy useful advice for anyone looking to build a company. You can follow her at Michelle Serro on Twitter. As you probably heard from the talk and questions, these events are always a lot of fun. Yes, they sound pretty good as recordings on this podcast, but they're so much better in real life. So if you'd like to come to an event, just check out what we've got coming up next at betaworks-studios.com. Some events are for members only, but many are open to the general public as we start to build our community of founders and builders. Remember, we're the only place in town that's able to connect genuine founders with everyone else interested in the startup ecosystem. And of course, if you want to become a member, we'd love to have you apply. So for more episodes of Builders, just subscribe on Apple or wherever you choose to listen. Check back with us every Tuesday for new episodes. And give some of the past ones a listen. We have episodes on blockchain, building for Instagram, why you should delete your social media accounts, and much, much more. And if you leave us a review in iTunes, that would help so many more people find all this great knowledge. Follow along with us on social media. We can be found on Twitter, Instagram, and Facebook at BuildersPod, #BuildersPodcast for all things Builders. If you click on the description box, it's all linked there. We look forward to hearing from you. And until next time, I'm Layla Ueda. Happy building from all of us at the BetaWorks Studios team. See you soon.